Hello and welcome to our pre-presentation podcast for Science of Practice in Medicine. Today I have Dr. Kaul, who is going to be presenting during June comprehensive pain management and the impact of lifestyle on it. But first of all, hello and welcome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for doing this. Really looking forward to it. I wanted to get right into something in your presentation, which is the lifestyle. I will tell you, I think we providers are scared of the lifestyle because it tends to sound like hippie and non-medical and non-scientific and all that stuff. But a lot of that is very, very important, and we are quite ignorant on that. So tell me how lifestyle relates to pain management.
Yeah, so similar to yourself, I think, you know, when I went through medical school and even when I went through residency training and fellowship, like lifestyle wasn't really something that was really highlighted as part of our medical education, right? Because we're supposed to learn all the hard stuff, like how all the meds work and all the super complex pharmacology of all the meds and the organ systems and the pathology and all this. But lifestyle was kind of like an afterthought. Because it's based on the idea that, sure, everybody knows that lifestyle helps, but, you know, and there's an assumption that, but it's too hard for people to do.
Correct.
And so, you know, there's no place for a doctor to talk about it. In fact, when I was in residency, I remember I was talking to one of my patients about what they were eating because they were eating some pretty scary stuff. And I presented that during rounds and my attending was honestly confused, and they asked me if I was a dietitian or
whatever it has to do with anything, right? Was kind of like
right. Yeah. So right away, so there's kind of this like tendency to maybe not talk about it or leave it to another professional. But in 2020, when I started doing pain management here at CenterCare, you know, I was seeing a number of patients that had a number of different pain conditions.
Okay.
And at that time, you know, COVID was happening. So everyone who had a chronic illness was getting sick from COVID. You remember those days when if you had some sort of a chronic illness, you were getting sick from COVID. And I was getting patients in my clinic who were also getting chronic pain because they were getting COVID or they were getting post-COVID syndrome and they were developing these long, drawn-out chronic fatigue, chronic pain syndromes from the COVID. So I thought, well, what is this connection between chronic illness and chronic pain? And I even remember back then when my nanny had COVID and she said, you know, what's weird is that I feel better when I eat fruits. And that was like early on. I had no idea that there were just decades and decades and decades of data behind the role of diet and chronic illness. And that all became apparent to me in 2020 when I read this book, How Not to Die by Michael Greger.
Okay.
Have you heard of that book?
I think you told me about it. But this is mainstream data you're talking about. This is not obscure stuff.
This is not obscure at all. This has been well established, repeatedly demonstrated in large studies across continents. And, you know, we have multiple reasons for why. I mean, this. I was just talking about diet right now for why this works. And so 2 years ago, I joined the ACLM, the American College of Lifestyle Medicine. And so I sought out the board certification. I did complete that board certification last year. And that's kind of based on six pillars of lifestyle medicine.
Okay.
Which is the whole food nutrition, stress management, sleep, avoiding risky substances, physical exercise, and social connection, last but not least. And interestingly, all of these treatments have generally been established within the pain world as well. For like chronic pain rehab, we're supposed to touch on, you know, anti-inflammatory diet for fibromyalgia, which is essentially that diet. And then exercise, we know that for chronic pain, even though it hurts to move, generally people with pain who are more active have less pain because there's less of the deconditioning that comes from that. And the nervous system gets good activation from movement and stress management.
You mentioned a couple of times chronic pain, which is, of course, what you're going to be talking about. the whole thing puzzles me. It's like an infectious disease. You said chronic sepsis. Pain where yeah. and from what? You know, what's the deal with it? Are you okay? So if you have an injury that does not resolve, you have constantly pain, then you resolve it and move on. What's going on with these patients?
You know, I love that question. Yes. So like traditionally, you know, it has been kind of when we say like traditional medical model, we're looking to find the problem, like where's the lesion, right? Or in neurology, we'll say, where's the lesion? What's the structure that's affected? What is the cause? We try to look for the root cause. And, you know, with the advent of imaging that we have, we can get all these fancy images with MRIs, and you see the soft tissues structures, and we can see the inflammation in the structures. So many times you look for that tissue injury, right? And historically, chronic pain was thought to be something where, you know, you just haven't found the tissue injury. But then over the last 50, 60 years, they discovered that pain isn't only tissue injury. Particularly in the 1990s and the 2000s, with the advent of neuroscience, understanding that pain actually goes beyond tissue injury. And it's the nervous system that takes on a whole new life. The peripheral nerves, the spinal cord, the brain undergoes certain changes to that repeated stimulation of pain, either because the injury went for too long or because of other factors that the patient had that made the nervous system ramp up. And so now you're looking at the nervous system being the main culprit, right? But I think with the lifestyle medicine approach, what I'm realizing more and more with my patients is that it's actually not just their nervous system. It's the interplay. It's the nervous system and it's the interplay of what's going on out there in their body. So there actually can continue to be tissue injury. And what I'm seeing a lot of is tissue injury related to metabolic disease in a lot of my patients.
So hold on. So these are people that do not have what we would call a precipitating injury, if you will, or whatever. It just appears as one of the manifestations of an overall poor state of health.
Sometimes they may have had an original injury, but most injuries without the risk factors. So there are certain risk factors that turn acute pain injuries into chronic injuries or chronic pain situations. Most acute injuries resolve, right, within their time course of healing, regular healing time. You know, skin takes 2 weeks to heal. Deeper tissues take 6 weeks to heal. Discs may take several months to heal because that the healing process is a little bit slower. Whatever that time course for regular healing is, most people heal. And if the tissue is healed, you would think the pain should be done. But you're right. In the small select group of patients, the pain continues. And in every patient could be a different story. There could have been because they continue to injure their tissues. For example, in our talk, we'll talk about the biomechanical injury that patients with spine pain often incur upon themselves is because they continue to bend and lift and they continue to re-injure their spine tissues. It's almost like, I give this example of like, say you have a spouse and they're trying to tell you something and you just keep ignoring them and just, you know, giving them a hard time like that. And then they might, you know, get really serious and say, no, like, I'm not joking about this. I'm serious about this. Like, you need to stop bending over every time you pick up your laundry basket because you're hurting me. Right. And so I think it's really important to understand that pain is a signal from the body, but it's kind of like, you know, if you have a toddler and they don't quite know how to use their words yet, right? Your body is not going to use words to tell you exactly what you're doing wrong, but it's trying to communicate. Mm. Whatever you did there, I didn't like it. So it could be a repeated biomechanical injury, or it could be a repeated metabolic injury.
Yeah, that's the one I'm interested in because, well, I'm interested in everything, but that's the challenging because you meet all these people that have pain. So let me ask you this question. Is there a subgroup of people and double digit of the chronic pain? Could it be that their pain is profoundly conditioning that drives along with inflammation and poor mobility, are just diffuse.
That's the majority of my patients.
Yeah, so they don't have a focal pain. They
Of my patients here in St. Cloud, no, they do not come to see me for a focal AC joint, focal knee, focal thumb, focal, one simple disc issue, one simple joint issue. They have multiple factors contributing to their pain that is making their pain so complex and so long lasting. And they may have multiple pain issues also. And once when one pain issue seems to resolve, another seems to prop up. Like they'll have these long 20, 30 year histories sometimes of these pain syndromes and these learned behaviors of avoiding certain activities because of pain. And so, no, these, I would say, probably over 90% of my patients are complex.
So what are we doing? You know, sometimes when I get patients that tell me, oh, they tell me I'm crazy or I think I'm crazy, I tell them, you know, if you feel that you have a mouse running inside your head, what matters is that you feel that,
100%.
You know, and we need to help
pain
you
is 100%
stop feeling
real.
That. So,
yeah.
But I imagine it ends up being a snowball because you get pain perhaps because you are
100%.
Deconditioned or metabolic injury.
Yes.
And because of that, you move less.
Right.
And because of that, you
yes.
get depressed.
Yes,
and
that's
of
called
that,
the pain
and
cycle.
That's
exactly right. And I have one of my slides. Yeah. You just read it straight off the slide. It says you have the fear. You move and then so, and it hurts. So there's a learned behavior and it's an automatic process sometimes, a subconscious process, maybe a conscious process, but many times a subconscious process where then you're trying to protect yourself. And so you may miss out on opportunities and activities that would have otherwise been a source of joy, a source of challenge, which would have given, you know, there's dopamine, right? And in some amounts of stress and some amounts of challenge, there's a lot of benefits that we get as humans just through some exposure, but pain can be so isolating, especially when there's fear involved that patients can sometimes wind up kind of circling the drain there when getting more deconditioned, getting more socially isolated, getting more depressed, getting more anxious, which then ramps up their nervous system even more, which then makes their pain even worse when they try to do things. And it's a confirmation bias that they set out to, which is why, since the 60s, since the 70s, the chronic pain rehab programs that have been established around the country center on cognitive behavior therapy. For chronic pain, center around those automatic negative thoughts.
Yeah. Yep. I love how almost most of it has nothing to do with controlling the pain. When you think about it, let me ask you, I don't mean to sound like I would be the son of Confucius and Buddha if they had a child, but if you could get a patient with chronic pain and you tell them, stay away from medicine, come with me, lose weight, eat healthy, whole grains, vegetables, let's be happy, don't stress, let's meditate. Your educated guess would be that the majority of people would resolve without having to spend a single dime on a medication or a traditional approach? Or
I have several stories to share with you that have not only shocked my patients, but also shocked me because these were conditions that I didn't even know could reverse in the timeline that they did reverse. Now, of course, you mentioned like, how do you tell these patients this? It's sometimes you get very lucky because you meet a patient that's in the right stage of change. You know, they're ready to take an action. They're in that stage of change where you meeting them and that provider giving the information, and they have enough self-efficacy where they feel like they can start and they can address the barriers that come their way, and they have the social support to address. But many of our patients are not at that stage. So the ones that I have personally seen get remarkable results have been the ones that have had a lot of protective factors. But the ones that are still work in progress, you know, we're here to support them. And what we're doing within the pain department is we have set up a group, 8-session group medical visit program to go through all of these lifestyle medicine strategies, neuroscience of pain, easing pain holistically strategies, which is delivered in an interactive group format with real practical strategies included. And that's one. And we also have collected my right of resources. Now, post-COVID, we have so much access to telehealth. And luckily, there's companies that are covered by insurance to deliver pain coaching, which is something that the Mayo Clinic uses as well. And we can chat about some of those resources. But the provider doesn't have to do it all alone. You know, the patient is in the driver's seat, and there are professionals that are trained in motivational interviewing and in health coaching and in pain coaching that can help our patients. So I'm hopeful that now that we have started on this path, you know, I want to see 1 year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, how many of our patients, you know, not only managing their pain more successfully, but actually thriving in all aspects of their life the way they want to.
I love all this. This is great. And I was looking at your slides and you're talking about a lot of things, but of course, a big chunk is what we are focusing on. What kind of patient should be referred to you? Because it's perhaps not as simple as somebody who lingers with pain all the time. Well, how would you define the patient that you would be able to help, and perhaps it's too much for a primary doc or provider?
You know, my hope with this presentation is really to be able to empower any physician out there to be able to see a chronic pain patient and continue them on the right path of this approach. Because you're right, there isn't enough pain specialists or you know, our pain team as we try to continue to grow it. I wish I could answer your question in a more precise way, but really any pain patient benefits from, you know, the whole thing of chronic pain education. So my hope through this talk and through engaging with our referring providers is to hopefully be able to share those tools early on, because yes, you need a chronic pain specialist to do the injection or to do the spinal cord stimulator or to do kind of those advanced interventional techniques. And the chronic pain specialist has spent the time to learn about the neuroscience of pain and has been board certified and understands the, you know, the pathophysiology of all that. But really, the principles are so simple in lifestyle medicine and so universal that you don't need any specialized pain education, I don't think, to make a major impact for polyarthritis, for peripheral neuropathy, for fibromyalgia, and even low back pain, which I historically thought was, you know, primarily a biomechanical issue. Now I'm realizing that improving blood flow to the spine significant and improving mitochondrial function significantly improves muscle strength, reduces irritation to facet joints, reduces the thickening of the ligamentum flavum, which improves neurogenic claudication symptoms. And to see my own patients resolve neurogenic claudication symptoms, which historically we've thought in pain management as maybe 30%, 50% epidurals will help, but most of them will go to neurosurgery. And now to see that lifestyle reverse that, I mean, just gets me so excited.
It's amazing. And I love exactly the point that you made that is so straightforward. It's like I was reading a few years ago, we've been carrying stuff as humans for thousands of years, and we've known the wheel for thousands of years. And only somebody 40 years ago decided to put wheels on luggage.
Right.
You know, and up to the 80s and 90s, people would be at the airport carrying this piece of luggage. So it's this kind of thing. It's so obvious.
We've had the simple tools all along to support our bodies, to give our bodies the right fuel to move. But we have been looking for the technological advance, which it's amazing the technological advances we've made and what we can do. But, you know, to forget about the basics and only rely on the technology we're missing out on. Thank you, Doc, for inviting me to this.
No, of course. Thank you. I'm really looking forward to this presentation. And you will be talking about many aspects of management of chronic pain, but this is so underappreciated that I think it's great that you'll be talking about this in June. So very much looking forward to it. Thank you.
Thank you.